Minnetonka, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Following the removal of President al-Bashir from office, the High Commissioner underscored that the crisis in Sudan has its roots in human rights grievances, unfulfilled economic, social, civil and political rights, and that therefore the solution must also be grounded in human rights.
That's UN Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights Andrew Gilmore on the deal reached between Sudan's military and pro-democracy protesters. Details coming up. Also, at the African Union Summit, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari launched the African Continental Free Trade Area by signing the continent's largest economy onto the deal. And a South African man who won the chance to become the first black African in space has died in a motorcycle crash. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, as governments and international organizations around the world condemn last week's bombing of a migrant detention center in Libya that killed more than 50 civilians and wounded at least 130, VOA's Heather Murdoch brings us to Tripoli, where desperate migrants are still trying to travel.
This is the sound of a quiet protest behind the walls of a compound where hundreds of migrants remain detained outside after a bombing destroyed parts of the center, killing dozens of people. Signs say things like, "We only wait for death and no humanity." They are demanding release and safe passage out of Libya. Kilometers away, but still within earshot of Libya's ongoing war, other families are not detained, but are also sleeping outside and have no place to go. Most of the families here fled war and genocide in Sudan. Then they fled war here in Libya and were later kicked out of emergency housing. Naima, who has been living here for about a week, says her Tripoli home is still in a war zone.
So the house completely is not good. There is no door, there is no window. So it's not safe to stay.
At a detention center in the suburbs, other women and children languish, hoping to be freed. Some here fled extreme poverty in Nigeria and are victims of human trafficking, bound to continue their journeys by their belief in West African magic. If they don't pay traffickers tens of thousands of dollars for their passage to Europe, they will be cursed, says Mercy, a detained mother of an eight-month-old named Hamza.
Either he will die, or he will be mad, or he will be useless. He cannot even do anything. He will be crazy.
It is getting harder and harder to cross to Europe, she says, because of closing seaports and growing anti-immigration sentiment in the Western world. But like many migrants, Mercy says, for her, there is no going back. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Tripoli.
What was once Europe's largest asylum seeker and migrant reception center, the Caramino, near Catania in Sicily, was officially closed today. Italian Interior Minister Matteo Salvini hailed the move, saying police investigations had discovered the activity of what he called mafias, not only Italian but also Nigerian, based at the center. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA.
Interior Minister Matteo Salvini said he kept the promise he had made, closed the camp in Mineo, considered one of the largest in Europe. The remaining migrants have been moved to a center in Calabria, and no one remains at the facility, which housed more than 4,100 people at its peak in July 2014. Before being turned into a reception center, it was a housing complex for the U.S. military. Salvini said the complex, which resembles an American suburb, will be put to good use, but no decision has yet been made as to what it will become. The anti-immigration interior minister, who traveled Tuesday morning to Mineo, hailed the closure. Salvini said some investigation has brought to light the evident activity of mafias, not only Italian but also Nigerian, which had expanded as a drug dealing operation in the whole local area. Now the CARA is closing and it is a beautiful morning, he added. The interior minister also said the closure of the center was positive news for the local population and the entire territory, which now would no longer have to fear criminal acts by the migrants. On the same day, Salvini inaugurated a new police station in the nearby town of Caltagirone. The Italian government had already steadily reduced the number of people at the Mineo Center when Salvini's League Party and the Populist Five Star Movement government took office in March 2018. The number of occupants stood at slightly more than 2,500. Since taking office, Salvini has issued two decrees on migrants and security, the second most recently. He has declared war on charity rescue vessels and is operating a closed ports policy in Italy. But hundreds of desperate migrants continue to arrive from Libya on Italian shores by their own means. Organizations that provide assistance to migrants have accused the interior minister of stripping migrants of basic rights, marginalizing them, and exposing them to criminality. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Security officials closed off Nigeria's National Assembly today after shots and tear gas were fired at the standoff between police and Shiite Muslim protesters turned violent. There were no initial reports of injuries, and it was unclear who fired the shots. Members of the Islamic Movement of Nigeria have been holding regular protests at the National Assembly to urge the release of their leader, Ibrahim Zakzaki, who had been detained since 2015. State News Channel NTA says they tried to enter the complex today, setting off the confrontation with police. A power-sharing agreement between the junta in charge of Sudan and the protest movement that wants a civilian-led transition to democracy could be signed anytime soon now. The draft agreement sees civilians appointed to 6 of the 11 seats on a sovereign council, which will become the highest decision-making body overseeing the transition to democracy. I talked to our reporter in Khartoum, Naba Mohadin, to fill us on the latest.
Today, the TMC and DFCF, they stated that they are finalizing the legal agreement on the political agreement that ended the dispute in Sudan. The suggested agreement is a sovereign council made of 11 people, 5 from military and 5 civilians, and number 6 is a civilian with a military background, but it's in dispute. It's a dispute point also. Number 6 personnel is not something that they agreed on, but the agreement is 11 people in the sovereign council. And they also agreed on postponing the Legislative Council up to 3 months after constitution formation, after they announced the government, the transitional government. So they will also agree on the Legislative Council 3 months after this. So today, everybody is waiting for the announcement of the final agreement and assigning it, which will be tomorrow.
Naba, how are people feeling about it on the streets of Khartoum? to usher this new era?
Actually, people are celebrating this. They called it a victory because they didn't think for a while that TMC will share power with civilians, especially after the violent event of breaking up the sit-in in June 3rd. So people celebrated in the streets. They think that it's a good compromise, the agreement, and they have a hope of this, that they can build the country with civilian period, which will be 18 months after 21 months of military transitional period.
So, are you sure by tomorrow they'll be signing the agreement?
No, I'm not sure it will be tomorrow. Nobody is sure that it will be tomorrow. They stated that it's Wednesday, but there is nothing guaranteed. Also, some officials and people also expected that maybe they will say they need more time, because once the African mediator said that the agreement is made and announced it, people celebrated in the streets. In the same time, officials in TMC said it will take time for preparation because they want to invite from different states. And it will be there is an invitation for representatives of states and diplomatic delegates, and that would make the agreement take a time to be assigned formally.
That was a reporter, Naba Mohadin, talking to me on the power-sharing agreement from Khartoum. UN human rights experts say Sudan must end its horrific legacy of violence and abuse and respect the rights of its people if it wishes to achieve a peaceful and stable society. A senior UN official has provided an update on the situation in Sudan on behalf of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights Andrew Gilmore says he is encouraged by the agreement reached Friday between Sudan's Forces for Freedom and Change and the Transitional Military Council. He praises the African Union and Ethiopia for mediating the preliminary power-sharing deal between Sudan's civilian opposition and military junta. But he says it will take a lot of perseverance and genuine commitment to make the deal work after months of violent protests, which finally succeeded in toppling longtime President Omar al-Bashir on April 11th.
Following the removal of President al-Bashir from office, the High Commissioner underscored that the crisis in Sudan has its roots in human rights grievances, unfulfilled economic, social, civil, and political rights, and that, therefore, the solution must also be grounded in human rights.
Unfortunately, Gilmore notes, the removal of Bashir did not end violence or abuse in the country. He says more than 100 peaceful protesters were killed by security forces on June 6th. He says civilians opposed to continued military rule have been subject to widespread human rights violations and violent repression of protests.
We encourage all parties in Sudan to continue to resolve any outstanding issues through dialogue. OHCHR welcomes that the agreement reached last week includes a commitment to conduct an independent investigation into the violence perpetrated against peaceful protesters. It's important that investigations contribute to justice and dignity for all victims of such violence.
Osama Humedo of Sudan's Ministry of Justice says the Transitional Military Council is committed to upholding all human rights mechanisms. He speaks through an interpreter.
Sudan is living through a genuine change towards transition of power as a result of an inspiring popular revolution that imposed new facts on the ground. In this new era, Sudan looks forward to the cooperation and support of the international community in order to overcome the challenges it faces in all fields.
Humeda says Sudan is changing its ways, so it is time that unilateral coercive sanctions on his country be lifted. He also urges nations to cancel Sudan's crippling foreign debt. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
At the African Union Summit, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari launched the African Continental Free Trade Area by signing the continent's largest economy onto the deal. After months of reluctance over competition concerns, Nigeria's support gives weight to forming the world's largest free trade zone. a 55-nation bloc worth $3.4 trillion. Experts expect trade among African nations to grow by 60% in just 3 years. Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy about the significance.
Well, I think it's potentially very significant. For a long time, a key barrier to African economic growth and development has been limited levels of intra-Africa trade. Intra-Africa trade only comprises about 16 to 17% of African trade overall, compared to, you know, over 60% in Asia or Europe. You know, that means a lot of African countries are trading more with partners outside the continent than they are with their own neighbors. So there's a lot of lost opportunity for regional trade and for, you know, facilitating exchanges within the region, you know, and the whole idea of comparative advantage that certain countries are going to be able to produce certain things more efficiently than others. And if they're trading with each other, then both countries will benefit from that. So I think by reducing the tariffs between countries, it should open up opportunities. And with Africa's population growing, expected to double by 2050, growing cities, growing middle class, you know, there's a growing market that African entrepreneurs can tap. So I think it's potentially very exciting. I think economists at the IMF are estimating that, you know, in the medium term, it can expand trade by about 15 to 25%.
Experts say African Continental Free Trade Area is facing challenges other than tariff barrier. Can you spotlight some of the major challenges facing this agreement?
I think, you know, this gets to some of the reasons why we haven't seen more trade prior to this time. And, you know, there are a whole host of reasons. I would highlight some of the key challenges are infrastructural, at poor roads and transportation infrastructure, you know, poor ports, limited air cargo capacity. These things make it difficult to link up different markets and create reliable supply chains within the continent. It's one of the reasons that many traders have decided to trade outside the continent rather than try to build regional networks. There are issues like a stable electrical current that different traders would be able to rely on. Issues like political instability and physical insecurity from conflict in various countries. It also makes investments in expanding trade more risky. So these things, as well as other, you know, non-tariff barriers, are also restrictions that are going to have to be overcome if this trade agreement is going to realize the potential that it holds.
Which African country is expected to gain more from this agreement?
The advantage of free trade is that it opens up, it expands markets, and so even small countries now have a chance to play in a bigger market. But it requires traders that are efficient and that can more productively access resources and move them to areas of market than their competitors. So it's going to reward the most efficient entrepreneurs and companies that are out there. And so I think it gives advantage to countries with more developed business sectors, countries like South Africa and Kenya, Mauritius, Rwanda, Morocco. All these countries have already made a lot of reforms in terms of ease of doing business. So I think they'll have an advantage. You know, they also have some capital that can help expand those networks. But the agreement isn't limited in that way. So I think even countries without real developed business networks will have the opportunity to realize some of the greater potential that these bigger markets will offer if they're willing to take the reforms and invest in being more productive and competitive.
And that was Joseph Siegel of the Africa Center for Strategic Studies speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy. A South African man who won the chance to become the first black African in space has died in a motorcycle crash. Mandala Miseko was 30. A family statement said Maseko died in Pretoria over the weekend. In 2013, the part-time disc jockey beat a million entrants from 73 countries to become one of 23 people chosen to win a trip to space and a spot at the U.S.-based ex-Apollo Space Academy. He spent a week training at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida in 2015. But Maseko never got to experience his dream. The company organizing the flight, X-Core Aerospace, went bankrupt in 2017. The first African in space was white South African businessman Mark Shuttleworth, who bought a seat on a Russian Soyuz capsule for more than $15 million. He spent 8 days aboard the International Space Station in 2002. In Ghana, illegal fishing by foreign trawlers is costing the West African nation around US $50 million a year and threatening coastal livelihoods. Stacey Knott reports from Accra.
On a beach in Ghana's capital Accra, fishermen from the Nungua community are waiting for the vibrantly painted canoes to return from sea with their catch of small fish to be sold at the local market. In Ghana, about 2 million people rely on these fish for their food and income, but trawlers, run almost exclusively by Chinese operators using Ghanaian front companies, are illegally targeting the staple catch and selling it back to local communities at a profit in a practice called Saiko. A report released from local NGO Yen Puano and the Environmental Justice Foundation says. Kofi Aboga, director of the NGO, says Saiko used to just be a regular practice where fishermen would meet trawlers at sea and exchange the trawler's bycatch for goods they were carrying.
Today it has become a multi-million dollar business where trawlers are harvesting fish that they are not licensed to harvest and sell it back to some canoes. I will call those canoes business people. They are not traditional fishers. They just go out there without a net. They buy the fish from the trawlers and come and sell it in some designated ports.
The report found that in 2017, industrial trawlers caught almost the same amount of fish as the local fishing sector when illegal and unreported catches were taken into account. The report also found that the practice of Saiko also destroyed the livelihoods of local fishermen. Fisherman Frederick Borty watches as the young men pull the canoes onto the beach. He wants the government to banish those behind illegal fishing.
My children are not going no more getting money to go to school. So this is very, very painful thing we are talking about this. So if they can try to sell those people for us, we like it, so that we fish in our own country.
Borty and his colleagues say they are also faced with fellow fishermen undertaking such illegal practices as light fishing, where they beam light into the water to attract fish. Ghana's government says it is focused on tackling such issues. But if nothing happens soon, Aboga has a stark warning.
It is the ordinary persons who suffer. What happens if the fishermen don't get fish anymore? It becomes ghost town. Young people will begin to move across the desert in an attempt to go to Europe.
Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Tomas Blondet, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, historically black colleges and universities in the United States have also educated prominent Africans, like the founding presidents of Nigeria, Ghana, and Malawi. The role of historically black colleges and universities on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.